Regularly scheduled programs will not be seen tonight so that we may bring you the NFL football game live and in color.
From the man who brought you basically a sports show, if your football fix wasn't met on Thursday night, it's time for an additional slice. This is Basically a Football Show right now. Let's go!
Good evening and welcome, everybody. I'm Kirk Herbstreit along with Brett Musburger.
Get it in here! I got one thing to say. This is when the big dogs come out. Stay on the ball. You can't roll the big dogs. Stay on the ball.
Let's knock them on their backs, butt them in the mouth, knock their ass in the dirt. That's what we got to do.
Hey, baby, we're going to be here all day, baby. I like this kind of party, baby.
His method is not Grand Prix, but Demolition Derby.
Ladies and gents, welcome in. Basically a Football Show, Episode 6, Season 2. I'm Zach, along with me is Greg. Greg, not the most interesting college weekend, but we got a fair amount of things to talk about when it comes to off the field there. And in the NFL, teams are starting to be who we are, who we thought they were. There's a lot of people who are... We made some proclamations last week about a player and about a couple teams. We're wrong.
No, of course.
Honestly, I would advise people to stop listening to this podcast because we don't know what we're talking about.
Well, I'll take that a step further. Don't listen to any football podcast because none of, or radio show or anything, because none of us know what we're talking about. It's not just us. In our defense,
it is definitely all over the place right now. You could pick out two or three good teams, but the thing that was interesting with this week in the NFL is you had the two undefeated teams with the week off, the two members of the Super Bowl matchup from last week, Denver and Seattle, they were off. Even your upstart, the Arizona Cardinals, off. Your upstart Cleveland Browns, off. So some of the best teams were just not on the field this weekend. So a lot of other teams got to have the spotlight, and some of them stole it for sure.
It was. I will say this about our predictions: we were right last week when we proclaimed.
we were right 2 weeks ago. Yeah,
we were right when we said it. We just didn't realize that once we said it, we would turn out to be wrong. Because, especially in terms of the player we're talking about, what we said was true. It just turns out that he decided, I guess, to make us all look bad. But it was less than stellar weekend. I mean, there were some good games, but not the greatest matchups you're going to see all season in the NFL. Like you said, most of the good teams were off. So,
yeah. But let's start with Thursday, and let's start with that player. We're referencing Kirk Cousins as the Giants marched into Washington and put a beat down. 45-14, the football Giants get out of the nation's capital with a victory. Kirk Cousins. Not good.
Not
six
much.
Turnovers for Washington in the game. I mean, we saw Kirk Cousins in the game against Philly, and even though they lost, we said we saw great things from him. We had always seen this. We were ready to jump on the Kirk Cousins bandwagon. This was the opportunity. The Giants coming into Washington, who the Giants haven't been that great all season either.
They have not looked good at all.
No, and then so we thought on Thursday night, it's a short week. They have the – Washington has the momentum. Kirk Cousins will lead them to the promised land until he didn't and until he started throwing interceptions. And it looked like the Giants and Washington had switched quarterbacks so far this year.
Yeah, we were with them right up until he lost by 31 points.
Yeah.
But you know what, though? This is something I was thinking about with this game, and I'll ask you if this makes any sense to you. Could it be that the Redskins' offense on a short week is just tougher to – again, if Jay Gruden implemented a new game plan, okay, you've got a quarterback that's just become your starter. Maybe he implements this new game plan for the Giants, and they just couldn't pick it up fast enough. I mean, I don't know, but six turnovers, you're not going to win any game you give up the ball six times.
I don't know if that's game plan. I think that's just – I mean, I think it might be a lot of things. It could be the game plan. It's execution. It's –
Yeah,
I mean they looked bad.
No, they looked horrible.
Like there's I don't think there's one thing you could just point out and say this is what lost them the football game. They were bad. They couldn't play defense against a Giants team that looked pretty terrible all year. Eli Manning was throwing the ball over the place, four touchdowns. Victor Cruz, six receptions, 108 yards, and you know the defense had been kind of what kept Washington in the games in the early part of the season. But, you know, we've reached the quarter pole of the season, if you will, four games in.
Right.
And the defense was pretty bad in this game. And they're just – Washington's so inconsistent right now.
Exactly.
And I mean, they've had a lot of turnover with the offense because of the RG3 injury, and now Kirk Cousins comes in, and you've had two up and down games, and they've both been losses, unfortunately, for him. So it's, I don't know. It's,
I'll tell you what, here's where I'm at with it. I'm not ready to give up on Kirk Cousins just yet. I'm going to write this game off as just one of those weird aberration games that happens in the NFL once in a while. If he does this again next week, then it's going to be a problem. Then all of a sudden, it's just that, like we've seen so many times in the NFL, the backup comes in for the starter, looks great. Everybody's like, oh, my God, this guy's the solution. It turns out, no, he was just good as a backup. I hope that's not the case, but...
Well, here's the thing. Next week's not going to get any better for them. They actually have a long week because they played on Thursday, and they don't play again until Monday. But Seattle comes in to Washington.
Okay,
so Seattle's on the road, obviously, and they're obviously much better at home than they are on the road. But going against that Seahawks defense,
yeah,
after you just put out six turnovers, I don't know how well it's going to work out for Washington.
Well, I'll tell you this. Okay, with the season the way it is so far, anything could happen. I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I say this, Seattle on the road, they've learned how to win games on the road, but they haven't learned how to win. They haven't learned how to dominate on the road yet, the Seahawks. So usually when they get a road win, it's kind of close, like say, 19-17, 26, whatever. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see a game go that way. And I also wouldn't be a bit surprised to see the Redskins come out and just win straight up, because it's just that kind of a nutty season. Usually, in my book, you judge a season in quarters every 4 weeks. And we're at the quarter mark, like you said, I have no idea still. I think the Bengals are pretty good. I think the Seahawks are pretty good. I think the Broncos are pretty good. After that, I'm not too sure about anything, to be honest. You know, it's just, it's been nutty.
Yeah, well, we'll leave that game behind us, hopefully forever.
Yeah.
It
looks good. They had good-looking uniforms, I'll say that.
Yeah, well, that's the most you can hope for out of the NFC East, I guess. We'll move on to the Sunday. We'll start early. And we'll start with my Colts. Andy Luck, welcome back, buddy. 29 of 41, 393, 4 TDs with a drubbing of the Titans. Remember when the Titans looked really good and they won that Week 1 game?
Yeah. And
against the Chiefs on the road?
My irrational confidence was at an all-time high.
Yeah, and now they've been just decimated in the last three games.
Yep. It's been a quick and rough fall back to earth for me and my irrational confidence Titans, but man... It's nice to see the Colts getting things back on track, but...
Trent Richardson with a touchdown.
Really?
Yeah, well, 20 carries for 47 yards, but...
I'm surprised they didn't break in across the every network on television when that happened.
But 20 carries for 47 yards.
That's
Jesus,
what about... Man. That's not even three a carry. He's just not good.
He's so bad. I mean, it obviously helped on the time of possession. I mean, 42 to 17 when it comes to time of possession minutes. But the Colts over the Titans, but yeah,
you know. But again, the Colts have looked great. But I like the Colts. I think they're probably the best team in that division. But their last two wins have been over Jacksonville and Tennessee. So how back are they? I mean, it's nice they went out and did what they were supposed to do in both those games, which is blow these teams out, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
So that's a good sign if you're a Colts fan, I think.
Yeah, they'll have a little bit more of a test when Baltimore goes to Indianapolis this week.
Baltimore and the ageless Steve Smith. Yeah.
At the Ursae Bowl. We'll move on to your team, Greg, the one you own a stake in, as the Green Bay Packers back on the board with, their offense showed up. Aaron Rodgers, 302 with four touchdowns in a road win over the Bears. And again, the Bears, such an up and down weird team every year.
This seemingly. We got
and,
to see
and now the Packers showed some offense again.
We got to see the Bears and pretty much every iteration of the Bears that you're going to see throughout the season in this game. They were playing well in the first half and got shut out in the second half. I don't know what happened because the Packers' defense isn't good. It's still not good. I don't know what happened there. But
the Bears had 496 yards of offense and scored 17 points.
Well, Cutler started throwing the ball to the Green Bay Packer players. That was a big problem.
Yeah.
It's a nice win for the Packers. I'm glad to see them finally put up some points. But I've got to temper my expectations a little bit because of who they did it against. Because in the first half, this game looked like it could go either way. In the second half, it was like that the Bears left and the Buccaneers showed up. It was just horrible. I don't know.
What did you think of the touchdown that wasn't there at the end of the first half? Did you see that?
Yeah, the one that they called it like the greatest pass of Rodgers' career that's never going to count or something like that.
Well, that was not Rodgers. It was the Cutler play where they reached across the goal line.
But
there's Packers in the way of the shot. So you could say the football was over the line, but you couldn't see it.
Well, if the replays couldn't definitively prove that he was over the line, if that's the rule you're going to go by, that's the rule you got to go by.
Want to put GPS chips in footballs?
You know, I don't think that's the worst idea. Really?
Why not?
I mean, is it going to hurt anything?
No, of course not.
Yeah.
But it's not like – I know they've talked about doing that in the NHL for a long time, but in the NHL it was always a question of whether it would compromise the structural integrity of the puck because they've tried it and the puck would just explode on contact. I wouldn't have the same issue with a football.
No.
You put like two, one on each end of the football.
Right.
And be done with it. I don't know what the problem is there, but –
But, yeah, obviously, as a Packers fan, I'm not nearly as upset by that call as I'm sure Bears fans are because it's probably made a huge difference in the game. But then again, even if you score that touchdown, I don't know that that stops Cutler from throwing the ball away. What, I think he threw three interceptions in the second half?
Two.
But I don't know that that changes anything. I mean, it may make the score closer, but this game, I really didn't like the Packers' chances going into this game because they just hadn't looked good all season. I mean, even that one against the Jets – yeah, they won, but they didn't look good doing it. This is the best performance I've seen from them since last season. But I just, again, the Bears, like we've said for 2 years now, you don't know what to make of them because any team could show up. A team that you think might be a Super Bowl contender, right down to the team we saw on Sunday.
We'll move on. Houston with a win over the Bills, 23-17. Houston 3-1. The Bills now 2-2. Where to start? I guess my question, at least from the Texas point of view, is J.J. Watt the best defensive player in the league?
Absolutely.
Like, bar none? Because that 80-yard interception return on a screen pass that he had was just phenomenal, you know?
This is a defensive end running away from people on a football field on an interception return.
Mm-hmm. He's not a tiny guy.
No. If he's not the best player, tell me who is. Defensive player. That would be my question to anybody that disagrees.
I can't think of anyone right off the top, no.
What I thought about with this game was how many Texans fans do you think breathed a sigh of relief when they got that third win? After going 2-0 last year, losing and dropping 14 straight.
Yeah, I mean, they were helped out by playing the Bills, who, I don't know, they made some weird decisions in this game. E.J. Manuel throwing the ball 44 times in a game that they were leading for a good portion there early on. And, you know, just unable to put it together there at the end.
Well, he's, you know, Manuel's being sat down for Kyle Orton this week.
Jesus.
I don't know that that's the worst move. I mean,
I don't know if it's the worst move, but I don't know if it's the best move.
Well, obviously, if you want to sit down your starting quarterback, you'd like to have someone a little more consistent, reliable than Kyle Orton to put in his place. But the way E.J. Manuel's been playing so far, I just don't know that he's the guy that the Bills need. Because I was listening to Dan Patrick today, and it was, Rodney Harrison was on, and he was talking about the Bills, and I agreed. You know, they're pretty good at the skill positions. They've got a good, tough defense, but they need to put together some sort of offense. And right now, it's just obvious that E.J. Manuel is not the guy that's going to do that for them. So why not go with Orton, as my guess, is what I think, you know?
Well, I mean, the Bills are in an advantageous position. I mean, they're first place in the AFC East.
Yeah,
Bills.
Yeah.
Thanks to some other things we'll talk about in a little bit that we take great joy in.
Oh, my God, yes.
But when it comes to quarterbacks, I don't know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is doing a decent job at least through four games.
Yeah.
This isn't something I expected at least from the Texans.
Well, with Fitzpatrick, he did this for five games in Buffalo a few years ago too.
Well, yeah.
Actually, it was better than this for five games, so we'll see. But they're 3-1. They're clearly, well, I'm not going to say this with absolute certainty. Odds are they're not going to go 3-13. I think they're a better team. I just don't know that Ryan Fitzpatrick is – if I'm the Texans fans, I'm not printing up Super Bowl tickets just yet with Ryan Fitzpatrick as my quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, as we mentioned, we're at the quarter poll. So 3-1, and they're leading the division by a game over Indianapolis. I don't know how long it's going to last. Houston does go to Dallas this week in the Texas Bowl.
And those Cowboys, they will not make it easy for us, will they?
They just, you know, we'll talk about it when we get to the night game, but we try to put them away and say, we're not talking about them. And, well, maybe they figure themselves out. I don't know. I
think
the NFL is confusing. The NFL is a confusing place.
In the AFC South, which is the division we're in with the Texans right now, I still think the Colts are significantly better than the Texans are at this point. Now, the Texans do have J.J. Watt. They've got a pretty stout defense, but I think that top to bottom, the Colts are the better team. So, yeah, the Texans are 3-1 right now. I don't know if that holds for the whole season where they stay ahead of the Colts. I just don't know, because all things being equal, then you come down to the quarterbacks. One team has Andrew Luck. The other one has Ryan Fitzpatrick. Who do you like in that matchup?
If only we could combine the Colts and the Texans into one super team.
That'd be a hell of a team.
They'd be a really good team.
Oh, they'd be great, yeah.
J.J. Watt on one side, Andrew Luck on the other.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Give
Luck a couple of those Texans receivers to work with. Hell yeah.
Hey, give Andrew Luck Arian Foster.
Exactly. there's no justice in a world where Ryan Fitzpatrick has Arian Foster and Andrew Luck has Trent Richardson. That doesn't even seem fair to me.
Yeah. We'll move over to the East Coast. And we talked about it last week where the Panthers were making their reunion with Steve Smith, and Steve Smith told everybody to put on your goggles, because there's going to be some blood, some guts. It's going to be a lot of animosity towards both sides. And man, did Steve Smith go off.
Yes, he did.
7 receptions, 139 yards, and 2 touchdowns as the Ravens win in Baltimore 38-10 over the Panthers. Impressive little showing there by Steve Smith, showing it up to his former team.
When am I going to learn to start playing this guy on my fantasy team? This is like 3 weeks in a row.
No. You had him on your bench?
I did this week. I'll tell you why. I think I have a pretty logical explanation for this. I thought he's going to go in, run in his mouth. That Panthers defense is pretty good, despite what we saw here, and they're going to shut him down. Wow. I think I missed the boat bigger on that than I did with Kirk Cousins. But what do we make of this Ravens team? We're 3-1, and they haven't looked bad. I mean, they looked terrible on Sunday because of those god-awful uniforms, but they've played well.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Joe Flacco's making accurate throws?
I guess.
Is that weird to say?
Yeah.
He made some beautiful throws, he's still chucking it a good portion, and they're coming down with it. But, you know, it's something it's weird because we do criticize Baltimore for doing that all the time, but it works. They get it to work for them.
Yeah.
And they're filling in admirably for missing Ray Rice in the backfield.
That's the thing, though. I never thought that was going to be a problem to begin with, because if you remember, he was awful last year.
Exactly.
And running backs don't turn it around as they get older.
Well, I think the thing to take out of this is how quickly they've kind of put that whole thing behind them.
Yeah.
I mean, look at – and maybe it's just a difference of talent levels. I mean, you look at how the Richie Incognito situation last year with the Dolphins kind of took him down a few notches.
Right.
And the same thing with the Vikings here with Adrian Peterson, although, you know, they didn't look half bad. So I don't know. It's an interesting little thought, but
I think that right now, if I had to, I'd say that the Ravens are this year right now what I thought the Steelers were going to be. I thought the Steelers were going to be a 3-1 that you're looking at going, I don't know about this, but they're winning games, and that's what you got to do in the NFL. Simple as that.
I mean, they're only a. I mean, Cincinnati took a week off, so technically they're a half game behind Cincinnati. And Cincinnati did beat them in week one. But I think we did kind of shortchange this whole division when we talked about it. And, the Steelers are up and down. We'll talk about them in a second. Your Browns, I mean, they've played tight with a few teams. They beat New Orleans, and that may not be as big of an accomplishment anymore. But the Ravens have definitely shown themselves to be capable.
Yeah, they're winning games, and really, we may not be that impressed with the way they're doing it, but they're getting the job done. So I think we shortchanged that division, though, because at the beginning it looked like it deserved to be shortchanged. Maybe it's better than we thought it was.
Well, and thankfully for the Panthers, they play in the NFC South, which is bad, looking at the rest of these teams and how they've played now. So they're even with the loss, they're still in an advantageous position. Well, let's stick with the AFC South, or NFC South, AFC North matchup, and we'll move on to the Steelers and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers
in Pittsburgh, folks. That wasn't even home.
Fire up the Jolly Roger. The Buccaneers, you know, just hung around, didn't get down. I mean, they were down 17 points or 17 to 10 going into halftime, but they stuck with Pittsburgh, and eventually you look at the scoreboard and you're like, huh, look at that. The Buccaneers went down. They got that touchdown to Vincent Jackson there at the end and with seconds left in the game. And Lovie Smith gets his first win in Tampa Bay.
You know, and the thing was, too, is that Mike Glennon led a pretty nice drive to put the Bucs in position to win that game. I mean, we got a lucky bounce here, we got a lucky bounce there, and here we are at the goal line. I mean, he put together a nice solid drive and drove down and got the clutch touchdown with 7 seconds to go in Pittsburgh, which is not an easy place to play. It may not be as difficult to say a Kansas City or Seattle, or Denver, but it's not a walk in the park either. So I don't know. I mean, this is a game that the Steelers, if they're going to be a contender in this division, this is a game they have to win. They cannot let what happened on Sunday happen, and they did. And
this is one of those things where, like last year when they have to rely on tiebreakers, you can go to the end of the season, and if they're 7-8 or 7-9, 8-8, and they're on the outside looking in, you can point back to this week and say, well, they should have won that game.
Right. It's just
– And it was a weird game too, in that, I mean, these are two teams that usually you think of them establishing their running game first, but Roethlisberger threw 40 times, Glennon threw 42 times. The running game is dead in the NFL, I think.
It depends.
Ben Roethlisberger has to throw 40 times.
It is if you don't have a good running back, it's dead.
Yeah.
But I think we saw, like, with the Chiefs last night with Jamal Charles and the 49ers to a lesser extent.
And the Cowboys.
But this Steelers team, I don't know what to make of them now, because this is a game they absolutely should have won. I think they got away. I think they got one against the Panthers last week that they shouldn't have won, that they did win. And now they. But you see, you can't do that in the NFL. You can't go out and steal one and then turn around and give one away the following week. That just that kills you. You're
right
back where you
started. And they did have a lot of drop balls, despite Antonio Brown going for 131 and two touchdowns. They had a pretty nice looking flea flicker that just went right through Antonio Brown's hands. But then they also got a couple with what should have been an offensive pass interference on Brown in the end zone for a touchdown. So it goes back and forth, but the Steelers definitely had some missed opportunities there in the first half and third quarter that, comes back and bites you. You can't let bad teams like that hang around.
No.
And I think this is something else that we're ready to admit, and we kind of did last week, but despite the win, Tampa Bay is not a good football team.
No.
You know?
No.
So if you have the chance to put them away at home, you got to do it.
That's what I mean. This is a game the Pittsburgh Steelers absolutely have to win at home. And not only did they let it get away, but they let it get it away in kind of a devastating fashion. Because I don't know if we just all got caught up in the hype. Because, you know, the Bucs were awful at the beginning of last year, and they started playing good football down the stretch a little bit. And then Lovie Smith came in, and you think, well, they're talented. You know, they've got all this talent. But I don't know what we all saw in them, because they're just not good. Simple as that.
Yeah. Let's move on. To Detroit and the Jets. The Lions, with a pretty decent showing by the offense, they go into MetLife Stadium with a 24-17 win. Good game there by Stafford, 293, 24-34 for two touchdowns. Golden Tate, the leading receiver there for the Lions instead of Calvin Johnson, 116 yards.
Wow.
For the little guy. But the bigger story here, I think, is the Jets are now 1-3. They're only a game out of first place in the AFC East, which is weird. But there was interactions towards the end of the game between Geno Smith and Jets fans as the game was winding down. And Jets fans are already turning on Geno Smith after he was their savior last year, if you remember.
Right.
And they want Michael Vick to come in and start now. The New York Jets are never short on drama I guess.
No, and you know what? If you're the Jets at this point, why not give Vic a shot? I think that if you, here's the thing, okay, if you're just playing it out to let Geno Smith develop and see what he turns into, fine. If you're trying to win, you got to go to Michael Vick because Geno Smith, he's killing him. It's as simple as that.
I think, and as much as they want to let Geno Smith develop, is Geno Smith going to get any much better than what he is right now?
That's the question.
I don't think so.
And I just think that right now, if I'm the New York Jets and I'm Rex Ryan, I got to go to Michael Vick, at least until he gets hurt again, because you're 1-3. You're not, the team isn't god awful. They aren't like Tampa Bay awful. They aren't
they're in the middle.
Awful. They're in the middle.
Right. They're one of those teams that could have, if they string together some wins, they're right back in the wild card picture.
Right. And that division being what it is this season, you could sneak in and win that thing with a 9-7 record. Why not go to your best chance to win? I don't know what the logic is. I'll say this for Geno Smith. If he starts letting those fans get to him, it's over. Because if you can't put that out of your head, then you might as well get traded and go somewhere else because it's not going to get any easier. The minute they know you're in your head, it's just going to get that much worse.
Yeah.
You got to go to Michael Vick is what I think.
And if this is a situation where the Jets didn't want to deal with this controversy, you shouldn't have signed Michael Vick in the first place.
Right.
If you're fully investing in Geno Smith, then you sign – I don't know, somebody else. Derek Anderson.
Right,
man, yeah. There you go. You sign him to be your backup quarterback.
Or one of the 8 or 9 McCowns that are out there.
Yeah, I'm sure there's another lurker.
I think Zeppo McCown is available if you're looking for him. But yeah, to the Lions' credit, this is one of those games that if they're going to be a contender, they have to win.
Yep.
They got to go out and get one on the road, and they did just that. And they're sitting pretty at the top of that division right now.
No, agreed. They're looking fine. They were looking fine last year,
right,
too.
So right.
I think with the Lions, it's a wait and see because we know they have the offensive talent. We know that they have talent on the defensive side. We know they can score points, obviously, with the offense. It's about keeping it together. And really, I mean, this is something we talked about in the previews, and maybe my denouncing of Jim Caldwell is going to come back around on the other side because really all Jim Caldwell needs to do is keep the team calm and together.
Exactly.
And I think they'll be okay. If they can just stick it together. But again, it's only a quarter of the season. There's still a long way to go, and we saw where they were at the end of last year when they were up. They were 6-1, 7-1, something like that.
I think they were at one point. I want to say they were 6-2, and fell apart.
Because
there was I don't know how many weeks in a row there were all they had to do was win, and they pretty much wrapped up that division. And we were just astonished every week because they couldn't get it done.
Yeah.
And then the Packers sneak in at 8-7-1 last year and win that division, which is just that's all on Detroit. I'm sorry. I don't give the Packers any credit for that other than the fact that they just didn't lose as many games as Detroit did.
Yeah. Well, we'll take a quick escape from North America, and we'll go across the pond. I'm sorry, England. I'm sorry that we do this to you. We gave them the Miami Dolphins and the Oakland Raiders, and Ryan Tannehill and the Dolphins did what they should have done, continuing to play well away from Miami.
I will say this, in 1974, this would have been a great game.
Oh, yeah.
An awesome game in 1974. Would have been incredible.
Right. In the 70s or the 80s, sure, Dolphins, Raiders, it's a big-time game.
Yep.
Not anymore, but the Dolphins do get the win, 38-14. The Raiders are 0-4, and Dennis Allen, congratulations. You win the first coach fired sweepstakes. But, hey, at least they kept him on the plane ride back.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I just think, first off, I'm sure they've named an interim coach, right?
Tony Sperano. Speaking of the Dolphins,
he might actually stick around.
Who
wants to coach that team? Do you? Wouldn't. I mean, I guess I would if they gave me a paycheck. But why?
Right. That's what I was going to ask. Like, who? It's such a shame that to see the Raiders. I mean, as much as I hate the Raiders fans and that whole thing, it's a shame to see the Raiders fall as far as they have.
This was from the day the AFL started up until their last Super Bowl appearance in 2002. This was one of the NFL's marquee franchises, and now they are an absolute laughingstock. And they're not. There's not a single coach out there that's good enough to turn this team around that's going to want that job. There's just no one's going to want it. You're going to end up with Dennis Allen from here on in until you just change the entire culture there.
Well, it's not even that. I mean, I feel bad for somebody like Derek Carr.
Yeah.
Who, you know, I think he's a decently talented quarterback, but he's not being handled correctly, I don't think. And he doesn't have a whole lot to work with.
Right.
And
He's in the same spot his brother was in with the Texans, really.
Yeah, and it's in. I mean, people are already talking about them maybe going 0-16. I think they'll get a win somewhere down the road.
Yeah, I still think they're going to get three or four wins. Yeah, three or four. But
they're not as bad as that Lions team that we saw from a few years ago.
No,
where do you start with the Raiders? Like, what would be the first thing to change? It has to start from the top down because we thought there was going to be some sort of change once Al Davis finally kicked the bucket, but it's more the same. And they're never going to get rid of their ownership of the team or their control of the football operations. So, that thing's just descended into madness because there's not one single area. And people are talking about where they might draft next year. And if they draft somebody like Marcus Mariota or James Winston or somebody like that, that's not going to do any good. That's not going to fix it. I mean, we look back to their – since they've been so terrible and they've had guys like Jamarcus Russell come in and, that was a failure. They tried Matt Leiner. I mean, Carson Palmer was actually kind of decent for him a couple of years ago. But as far as developing their own talent, getting themselves out of the hole organically, I don't see what you'd change to make this Raiders team any better.
Well, I think you said it exactly right when you said it's from the top down. What has to happen, I think, it's going to be a process. You're looking at 4 or 5 years. You've got to get a general manager in there that knows what he's doing with a plan, and then the Davis family has to stay out of the way. You've got to turn the football operations over to a football person that knows what the hell they're doing. Get him in there and start rebuilding this team. Because if you keep running it the way you are, it's never, ever, ever going to improve. This is like Dallas on acid. It's just a disaster from top to bottom, and that's the only way. But you get a good GM in there. I don't know who would be out there or who you can get, but you get somebody in there that knows what they're doing, has a proven track record, and you stay out of their way. And you let them rebuild that team. You get a good coach, and then you just make it work.
It's sad. I mean, you look around the league and you think of, well, who's the face of the franchise, specifically like with a player, who would you think of when you first name that team? It's really sad when you say who's like the face of the franchise of the Oakland Raiders over the last, 10 years or so, and it's Sebastian Janikowski.
Yeah.
When your place kicker is, your most recognizable legacy player on your team now.
Yeah, that says it all, though. That's exactly because it's either that or you think of people like Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah.
And that, when that's the face of your franchise over the past 10 years, that's not what you're going for.
I mean, I think of Sebastian Janikowski. I think of Shane Leckler, a punter and a kicker.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to position players, I mean, there's Nnamdi Asamoah when he was good for that couple years before he went to Philly.
Right.
Charles Woodson's back.
Yeah, but for some reason. He's like 63 now? I mean,
yeah, right. So
he was winning Heisman trophies back when I was in college, it seemed like.
Yeah, I know. But, yeah, so Oakland's down the tube. And the Dolphins, they get back on the board with a win. Everybody should beat the Raiders at this point, though, so I don't know how much you want to take out of that, especially because it's against the Raiders and it's in London, of all things.
Right. The Raiders are playing 8 hours, I think, away from their normal time.
Nine
hours? Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it's I mean, good for the Dolphins. It's nice to see them get up off the mats, but I don't put a lot of stock into this win. It's just they played the Raiders in London, and I'm with you. I apologize to our friends in Great Britain for what we've done to them with these games we've sent them over the years. Yeah. And don't they have the Jaguars to look forward to coming up this season, too?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So get ready for more great football.
Yeah.
from speaking of the Jaguars, they also go 0-4 as Phillip Rivers and San Diego Chargers with a 33-14 home win over the Jags. 3 TDs for Phillip Rivers, 337. Jaguars are still pretty bad. And those helmets look even more awful in direct sunlight.
Yes, they do. I didn't think the Jags would be. I didn't think they were going to be good this year, but I thought they'd be competitive, and they haven't even turned out to be that.
Yeah.
But I will say this about that game: looking at the Jaguars with the uniform set they wore, if they would fix that helmet, that would be a damn fine look. But as long as that stupid helmet, my girlfriend asked me about this today. She goes, "What's that supposed to mean anyway?" I said, "Well," I said, it's a jaguar. It represents the jaguar jumping from the dark into the light to catch his prey." And she looked at me. I said, "Yeah, it's a mentally challenged jaguar. He's going the wrong way." But other than that, I think it's a fine look. But the Chargers got the win they should have gotten, and they're 3-1 now, and I think they're going to be a good team this year.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Blake Bortles, his first NFL start, 29-37, 253, one touchdown. Not terribly. You know, led him to 14 points there in the second quarter.
Was he still able to walk after the game?
Reportedly. It was 17-14 at half.
Right.
You know, they kept it close. You know, good job by Bortles to at least do that. But, you know, I guess that's the most you can hope for is just kind of decent performances and things to build on. And I didn't see the full game, but obviously it's steps. It's little increments that they got hope for.
Right, and if they can keep him upright and keep him from getting his brains kicked in, I think Bortles is a step in the right direction.
And we've seen it before in the NFL where teams can be terrible and all of a sudden it finally clicks.
Right.
Where they can be close and still be losing a lot of games, and then all of a sudden you're on the other side of it and you're winning all those close games. So
yeah.
Not that this was close, but I mean it was close for a half.
Right. They show flashes here and there where they can play competitive football. I thought they would do that more consistently this year, but they've still got a ways to go, it appears. But I do like the direction Gus Bradley's got that team going, and I think he's a good coach.
Speaking of teams with flashes, so the Falcons and Vikings are both 2-2. I don't know how. But Minnesota with Teddy Bridgewater puts up 41 points on the Falcons. The Falcons 0-2 on the road this year. They're probably going to – I guarantee you they'll finish 8-8.
More than likely.
And the Vikings putting that Adrian Peterson stuff behind them. Teddy Bridgewater played very well. He looks like he might have sprained an ankle there late in the game. But
I think I heard today that it's nothing too serious and he should be okay for next week. But see, now I think we talked about this way back when we did the draft show back in the spring. Of the quarterbacks that were available in the draft, I liked Blake Bortles a lot, but I thought the guy most ready to step in and play in the NFL right away was Teddy Bridgewater, and I think he showed that against the Falcons on Sunday.
He showed that. A lot of people showed a lot of things against the Falcons, though. Bridgewater went for 317. They had – God, what is this guy's first name? I don't know. Jerick McKinnon.
Who?
He ran for 135 yards on the Falcons.
Wow.
And Jarius Wright with 8 receptions, 132 yards to lead Minnesota in those categories. The hell is this Falcons team, man? I mean, they look unbeatable against the Saints in the first week at home. Then they look they lose on the road to Cincinnati. But Cincinnati's a good team. You say, well, okay. But they still look pretty bad in that game. Then they come home and they blow out the Buccaneers on Thursday night. And they go back on the road and they get blown out by the Vikings. What is this Falcons football team?
They're the poor man's Saints. That's what they are. They're good enough to win all their home games, not good enough to win any on the road. I think you're right. They're going to go 8-8. That's the thing. They're frustrating because at home, you go, man, this is a really tough team. They look good. And then you see them on the road and you go, wow, what happened? And I think you're right. An 8-8 season, if they can manage in that division, I think, this year, if they can manage to even get one win on the road and go undefeated at home, that'll probably be enough to put them in the playoffs, probably.
Yeah, I don't know. These are two teams that I don't know what to do with, and probably two teams that are going to be entirely inconsequential.
I'm curious to see how the Vikings go with Teddy Bridgewater under center, because I really think that he's ready to play right now. Now, again, it was the Falcons, but who do they have next? Do you have a schedule in front of you?
The Falcons.
No, who do the Vikings have next?
The Vikings. The Vikings. Oh, they're on Thursday against your Packers in Lambeau.
Ooh, okay. Well, maybe not. But we'll see when they get a full week off with Teddy Bridgewater. But, yeah, I'm with you. These two teams, who knows? I wouldn't want to play the Falcons at home. I welcome them on the road if I'm the opposing team.
Yeah, and move to what was really kind of the marquee game of the day. We talked about it last week, the Eagles and 49ers, that the 49ers need to come out and they needed to win this game if they wanted to have any shot at staying in this thing as Arizona and Seattle started to run away with things. And damn if they didn't do it. 26-21 over the Eagles, forcing 4 turnovers from Philly and holding on late in that game. The Eagles got the ball late and good effort there by the 49ers defense. Frank Gore, welcome back to the NFL. 24 carries, 119 yards for the back. And, I mean, you saw it all with the rushing game with the 119 yards. And time of possession, 42 minutes to 17 minutes for the 49ers. Ended up being a tight game because the Eagles, that offense is just so fast. But the 49ers scored some points in the second half and held on.
Well, here's the thing with that game. The announcers are talking about the 49ers have scored 13 points in the second half.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something you want to get terribly excited about, but the defense, got to give the 49ers defense credit. In the first half, it took the Eagles, I think, until sometime in the third quarter to get past the 50-yard line on offense. So that's impressive. But I still, yeah, the 49ers won the game, but they still, other than Frank Gore and a good performance for the defense, I don't think Kaepernick, what were Kaepernick's stats in that game?
Kaepernick went 17 to 30, 218 with two TDs.
Okay. That's better, but
better.
I don't know. I think at the Eagles, the turnovers hurt them a lot, and the Niners did a great job of shutting down their offense, but I don't know if I'm ready to say the 49ers are back just yet. But it was good for them to get the win, because if they lost, that might have been it.
Yeah, good for them. And the Eagles still, I mean, they're still the best team that in their division. They're going to win it.
I don't know.
Stop it. No. We'll talk about that in just a second. For as fast a strike as the Eagles can be, the way that the 49ers were able to shut them down at the end of the game was kind of concerning. If I was an Eagles fan, just I know you can score quickly when you move the pace, but if somebody slows the game down on you like the 49ers did with the amount of rushing and holding the ball, you get kind of stuck, you know?
Yeah, they did. The Eagles did drive down and had a shot at the end of the game, but there was just some bad play calling, and Nick Foles made a couple of dumb plays, but I said, yeah, you're right. The Eagles are still the best in the division, but I don't think that they're quite as much better than in that division as we thought they were. I'll say that.
Well, I mean, you keep saying it. Let's talk about it. Move on to the Sunday night game as the Dallas Cowboys with a big win over the Saints, 38-17. DeMarco Murray with 149 yards rushing, two touchdowns. And Tony Romo, hey, no interceptions this week, buddy. Way to go. 262 with three touchdowns as the Saints continue their plummet. And the Cowboys, they're running the ball first. And this is something that people have wanted to do for a while. But now that they're starting to do it and they're starting to win games by doing it, maybe they're a half-decent team all of a sudden.
Well, I heard this today on one of the numerous podcasts I listened to. I don't remember who said it, so I can't give credit, but someone said that Romo is taking what's available as opposed to trying to force things, and it's made a big difference. I think, too, having DeMarco Murray be able to just run up and down the field at will on people helps an awful lot, but they are 3-1 right now, and I think of the entire league at this point, that might be the most surprising thing to me, the Cowboys are 3-1 after the first four games. Especially considering who they've beaten to get there. I mean, this Saints team, we both like to make the Super Bowl this year.
Do you want to take that back?
Absolutely.
that defense has looked terrible through the first four games.
It's been, and the offense hasn't been a whole lot better.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting is, I mean, okay, they're 1-3, but as we always know that they're bad on the road, those three losses, all road losses.
Yeah.
So it's... You know, and the one game they played at home, they looked pretty good in, you know. But
right.
It's – I don't know if you can really judge the Saints on how they play at home anymore, because that's just how – and in a game like this too, though, where you're playing in a dome, and Dallas isn't that far from New Orleans.
I mean,
yeah, it's a road game, but come on. This is a game the Saints should have been able to be in, especially – we talked about as bad as New Orleans has played – everyone thought that Dallas was even worse when it comes to defense, especially in pass defense. But, you know, they held down the Saints pretty well. I mean, no points there in the first half and only 17 in the second half.
Right, and you look at the last two touchdowns. I mean, you know, how much of that was just garbage time stuff where the Cowboys were just letting them – just, okay, we'll let you move down the field because you're killing the clock.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. I think that the Cowboys are surprising at 3-1. What's even more surprising is the defense has played better than people. I mean, everybody said that the worst aspect of that team was the defense, and they shut out what's supposed to be a good offense in the first half and really held them really to probably only three significant points in the game. I mean, I didn't see the game, all of it, so I'm not sure. Because once it got up to a certain point, you quit watching. You know, you're like, well, this is over. But it's interesting. The Saints, I think they're not – I just think they're very good this year. I think we all overestimated them. I don't know about the Cowboys yet, but if they keep doing things the right way, you know, they're 3-1 in a division that's easily winnable for them, as long as the Eagles, or at least they're, let me put it this way.
Yeah.
The Eagles are probably going to win the division, but if the Cowboys keep playing like this, they're going to be a playoff contender, because outside of the top four or five teams in the NFC, it's pretty much there for the taking for anybody else.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm looking at their schedule now, and okay, so let's step back a bit on their wins. They beat Tennessee,
right?
St. Louis, were in a game where they had to come back down from 21 points down.
That's true.
And they beat New Orleans at home. They beat New Orleans when they're on the road, and we've established New Orleans is pretty bad on the road. Next, they play Houston, and this is a very important kind of show-me game for both those teams.
It really is.
And then the week after that, they go to Seattle. Ugh.
Ooh.
But then they host the Giants. They host Washington. They host the Cardinals. They go to Jacksonville, to New York, home against Philly, Chicago on the way down. But the schedule's not terribly difficult for them, you know?
Yeah, listening to that, I look at it, I think, okay, that's they could easily, if they play the way they've been playing these first four games, they could easily get 9-10 wins out of that just because of the schedule they're playing.
Well, I mean, I think it boils down to what happens this week when they play Houston, too.
Right.
Because if they can go to 4-1, then, of course, you're probably going to lose in Seattle, all right? 4-2. You're going to take that. But then you host the Giants. You should beat them.
Very winnable game, yeah.
You host Washington. You should beat them.
Yep.
And then you get another test of a game in Arizona, in Dallas later. And then you go to Jacksonville before the bye week. So
well, let's,
things
let's,
might just work out where they're – what would it be? Like 6-2?
I think it would be
So 10 weeks. So they'd be 7-3 going into the bye week.
Yeah. I think
which would be a miracle if you're a Cowboy fan.
Right. And it would be.
Not even that. If they were just 6-4, that's still better than they have been in the last few years.
Yeah. I mean, they've got a very realistic shot at coming out of at being 6-3 after 9 games, which is, I think, way better than anybody expected them to be. At that point, you've got 7 games left. All you got to do is go 3-4, and you're probably in.
Yeah,
that would get you to 9-7. Yeah. That's very doable for this team. So,
I mean, the thing that they've been chasing for the last several years has been that 10th win. You know, so I mean, they're in a great position now to get there. I mean, they're leading the league in rushing, and their defense, the pass defense, could use a little work, but the rushing defense is right there middle of the pack. It's average, and if they can run the ball like they have in the last few games. They shorten each game by doing that, and maybe they put themselves into a position to where it's entirely attainable that they could be those games against the Eagles are going to be pretty darn important, more important than we thought probably at the beginning of the year.
Well, and if DeMarco Murray keeps running the ball the way he has so far this season, that makes everything easier for Tony Romo. Everything.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about teams just sitting back and waiting for you to throw. He's not under as much pressure to force things like he does. And all of a sudden, you know, a team that we thought we weren't going to talk about for the rest of the season, all of a sudden we're having to talk about them every week because they're right in the thick of it right now.
Yep. So let's move on to Monday night into the center of the sports universe, Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, my God, that was beautiful.
The Chiefs. Oh, my God.
Wow.
They blew the doors off the Patriots. 41-14 was the final score there. Two touchdowns by Jimmy Garoppolo, or a touchdown by Jimmy Garoppolo late in the game. Tom Brady had just the one touchdown pass in the third quarter, but that was kind of the Chiefs backing off a bit. But, man, all credit to the Chiefs. They put out a great performance. Jamal Charles was, electric. Alex Smith was very good, 248 yards. 3 touchdowns, 28-26. As good as the Chiefs played, and all credit to them, 2-2 now are the Chiefs. Holy crap, the Patriots look bad.
Oh, they look horrible.
They look terrible.
Well, you look at that team right now. Shane Vereen is not having the year anybody expected him to have. He's not played well. What do you have for a receiving core outside of Gronkowski? You got a bunch of 5'9 possession receivers. I mean, you're just not going to – it's just – they're not a good team this year. We talked about it in the preview. Is this year the Patriots finally come back to earth? And right now, everything seems to indicate that's exactly what's going to happen. But I can't remember, since they got good and started winning the Super Bowls, I can't remember them ever looking as bad as they looked last night.
Yeah, I mean, Brady has nobody to throw to. He also has no time to throw.
Mm-mm. They looked horrible.
Yeah, sorry. Tom Brady has no time to throw. The offensive line is awful right now. And a lot can be made about losing Logan Mankins and trading him away. But, I mean, besides that one position there on the O-line, the Patriots looked porous. I mean, they couldn't run the ball at all. Stephon Ridley, 5 carries, 28 yards as their leading rusher. And, I mean, there was guys in Brady's face all night.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Mankins, he can't block the entire defense. So, yeah.
Right.
I mean, you put him back, I don't know if it improves things that much, really.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, too, when you look at this team, even their wins haven't been terribly impressive. They had to it took everything they had to beat the Raiders.
Yeah.
In Foxborough. What was it, last week or the week before?
Last week, yeah.
They haven't looked impressive at all this season. And when we said it last week, we said we could see the Chiefs winning this game. But I didn't expect this. I mean, I loved it, don't get me wrong, but I thought not in a million years would they just blow them out the way they did.
No, Arrowhead's a tough place to play. And like we said, it's the center of the sports universe right now.
Yeah.
As the Royals currently play their wild card game.
They're trailing 2-1 in the second right now, too.
Yeah, you know. God, I wish I could watch this thing with sound on right now. Sorry. But as much as I love football, playoff baseball in Kansas City, but the Chiefs, I mean, they tore through that Patriots defense. Dude, the Patriots defense was – they couldn't tackle.
No.
They were losing guys in coverage. You know, it's kind of one of those things where it's a dichotomy of – and Bill Belichick actually said this after the game was – the Patriots played at their worst and the Chiefs played at their best, and you got a game like this. They're probably a little bit closer to each other. I think the Chiefs are probably better at least 4 games into the season than the Patriots have been. But, you know, the Chiefs are right there. Maybe the Chiefs are still in position for a wild card spot with the way that they play. I mean, they got a very tough game this week as Alex Smith makes his return to San Francisco.
Ooh.
Before going into the bye week. And then they come out of the bye week and go to San Diego. So 2 big games here to really establish what the Chiefs are going to do.
But you know what?
Part of the schedule.
I got to say, I like their chances. This San Francisco team, they're 2-2, but they've been kind of hit and miss all season long. And at the Chiefs, one thing that I noticed last night is that, okay, you got Jamal Charles back. He went off last night. But Nile Davis is a pretty capable backup running back, too. Alex Smith, as long as he's not going to hurt you, I think the Chiefs are better than we thought they were going to be. And just like this Patriots game, I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see them go to San Francisco and get a win next Sunday. I don't think I'd predict it, but it wouldn't shock me.
Well, and you know how much that Alex Smith would just love to go back in and show up Jim Harbaugh. And I'm sure Andy Reid would love to help him do it. But, you know, maybe that means they overextend and they force it a little bit. Or maybe they just make a great game plan and confuse the 49ers. Who knows? But I think that'll do it here for week 4 in the NFL as we move into week 5.
We're at the one-quarter point.
We're in the thick of it here in NFL season. That was week 4 in the NFL. As we mentioned, the quarter poll for a lot of these teams. We're in the thick of it here in NFL season. Move on to the college portion of our program for a little education. not a terribly fascinating week of college football. Things kind of staying where they are at the top. No major upsets. Some close calls, but no upsets. We'll start on Thursday as the game that I hyped up, big matchup there in the Pac-12 South, UCLA and Arizona State. And Brent Hundley ended up playing for the Bruins in this game, and they just got some huge plays, just long, explosive plays out of the Bruins early and often and into the second half as The Bruins go into Tempe and just steamroll the Sun Devils 62-27.
You know, it's a shame that the Bruins finally look like a team that deserved to be ranked where they against your guys. Yeah.
Yeah, it was I've known all year that Arizona State just doesn't have a defense and they've got to try and outscore people. You know, and they had their backup quarterback in there and he threw 3 interceptions. He played decently outside of the interceptions, but you know, it's if you throw those interceptions and you can't – if you turn the ball over and then you just give a big play after big play. And, like, UCLA wasn't just getting, like, 10, 15 yards. They were getting 25, 30, 40 yards on some of these – their medium-range plays. And they got a couple long touchdowns, one from, like, the 8-yard line or some garbage like that. No. The first play of the second half, Arizona State kicks it. It's a touchback. First play of the second half is an 80-yard touchdown pass.
Wow.
And – And, you know, it was kind of tight at half. I mean, 27-17, you're still kind of in the game.
Sure.
But first play of the second half is an 80-yard touchdown pass. You might as well just go home at that point.
Well, that'll take the wind right out of your sails, too, to start the second half that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Arizona State with their first loss, they drop out of the rankings. They go from, you know, 15 to all the way out.
That seems a little harsh.
It was a big loss.
Yeah, and, I mean, but come on,
quarterback. But and that win also puts UCLA back up to number 8, so people could be like, "Oh no, see, we were right the whole time." Sure. Yeah. Somehow UCLA in a win, they despite everybody else winning, they jumped over Ole Miss, Michigan State, and Notre Dame up to number 8.
Nah, can't see it. I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate. Like I said, that they came out and looked like the team that everybody had ranked so highly against your guys, but I'm still not sold on these guys. I'm sorry. Yeah.
We'll see what happens when they play USC and Oregon.
Yeah.
And really kind of get slotted where they need to
be. I mean, you know, if they win those, then sure, yeah, they deserve to be there.
Oh, yeah, but, sure. If they win the games, then they win the games and they deserve it. But until now, Arizona State's the only decent team that they've beaten. And it was with their backup quarterback. And yeah, okay, the defense still played awful, but if Taylor Kelly's in this game, I guarantee you it's closer. You know, it's at least ASU would try to hold on to the ball for.
Well, and you know, if your offense is playing poorly, your defense that spreads.
They're on the field more,
right? Yeah. Exactly.
So yeah, it was just a bad night all around for the Sun Devils. And UCLA with the win moves up to number 8 in the rankings. Also on Thursday, Oklahoma State 45-35 over Texas Tech. 4 touchdowns for the Oklahoma State quarterback Garmin. Okay, big deal. Move on to Saturday, and we'll start with the number 1 team in the land, your Florida State Seminoles. They got a game from NC State.
Yeah.
NC State went up early, 24-7 in the fourth. And NC State was just coming at them. You know, they were running the ball. They were getting big plays. And Florida State looked out of sync. But as the game wore on, NC State kind of went back to regress to the mean, started having some turnovers there. And Jameis Winston and Florida State rallied there in the second half for a 56-41 win at North Carolina State.
But aren't you a little bit concerned if you're Florida State that you gave up 41 points to NC State?
Yep. No, the mistakes the Florida State was making, definitely a little concerning. The defense not up to the par that you would expect from a number one team like that. And the other thing I want to point out, we praised Florida State's new uniforms.
Right.
That very light gold number on a white jersey with a thin red outline, I couldn't read them.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, not hard to look at. But, yeah, definitely they're not Florida State's not immune. And it's something that I've brought up continually over the last few weeks. Even the best teams right now have some major flaws to work on.
Yeah, it's going to make a very interesting playoff because I don't see a clear-cut favorite right now.
No, definitely not. We'll move on down. Oregon had the week off. Alabama had the week off. Oklahoma had the week off. So we move on to number 5, the Auburn Tigers, the big win at home over Louisiana Tech. Ho-hum. Texas A&M played Arkansas in the Jerry Dome. Johnny Manziel got a class ring at the game because, you know, Cleveland had the week off, so we got to go watch his team. But in a game tighter than it really should have been,
yeah,
it was into overtime. But Texas A&M pulls it out there in the OT for a 35-28 win, handing Arkansas their 14th consecutive SEC loss.
Remember when Arkansas was pretty good just a few years ago?
Uh-huh.
With Ryan Mallett and that
Ryan
whole thing?
Mallett, yeah.
Yeah, they played the Buckeyes in, I think it was the Sugar Bowl maybe a few years back, and wow.
Yep.
They're not so good now, but I see that Kenny Football Hill, 380 – yeah, no, wait a minute. Am I reading that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But, yeah, I the thing about A&M that I just keep – I keep harping on it because I'm a Browns fan, but it's got to concern everybody that this team didn't miss a beat when Johnny Manziel got drafted. I mean, some people think they're even better now. So, I don't know. But A&M, they're number 6. That's I didn't think they'd be this good this year.
No, nobody did. And, I mean, nobody expected this from Kenny Hill, but he's in everybody's top 3 when it comes to the Heisman voting right
now. Sure, and he should be. He's played great.
Between Mariota and Todd Gurley and Kenny Hill. So Good showing for the Aggies there as they open up their SEC schedule 2-0. Number seven, the Baylor Bears. They go to 4-0 with a big win at home over – or on the road, excuse me, at Iowa State, 49-28. Good for you.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of that one.
Yeah. And so Notre Dame started last week at number 8. They moved down to number 9 because of UCLA jumping. And I actually got to watch the majority of this game against Syracuse at MetLife Stadium, a 31-15 win. I was actually pretty impressed with Notre Dame. But here's my issue with them. Golson, he looked great for portions of this game. He ended up with like 25 consecutive completions, one shy of the NCAA record. But at the same time, he also threw two interceptions, had a fumble, and Notre Dame turned the ball over a total of 5 times in the game. You know, they were explosive on offense, but they were also kind of careless with the football. So it's a little dichotomy there for the Irish.
Well, what do you think, though? I mean, is it because they were playing Syracuse? It's just not a very good team. And, oh, my God, were their uniforms awful. And,
Hey, but they're the grayness of the New York skyline.
Right. And the numbers are elongated to represent the skyscrapers and blah,
right,
blah,
and
blah.
They're playing in MetLife Stadium because they're New York's football team, damn it.
Yeah, that's all great. But like I say every time, you just got to convince New York of that, and you've really got something. I don't know.
It was a pro Notre Dame crowd, by the way.
I don't doubt it for a second. It was like that. Honestly, I lived up there for, 9 years, I think? And no, 7 years. God, I added 2 more years of that prison sentence. Why would I do that? But I don't recall even the city of Syracuse, where I live, where is the heart of Syracuse Orangemen country, or Orange, excuse me. And they didn't get that excited about this team. I mean, they would play. I went to games there where they would play pretty good teams, pretty good draws, and they would be maybe 65% full at the Carrier Dome. I mean, they don't even care about the team in Syracuse, let alone the state of New York.
Yeah.
So this whole their New York's college team is just a bunch of nonsense. It always has been. But they looked awful, and I think that – how many times did Notre Dame turn it over?
5,
and they still won by 16 points. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they were looking past because they got Stanford up next.
Yeah,
easy to look past the Orangemen to play the Cardinal.
Yeah, it was a good game by Notre Dame, but they got to be a little bit more careful with the football. They're going to get a reality check pretty soon.
Yeah, they can't do that against a good team and get away with it.
Right. So we'll move on. Where were we? Oh yeah, Michigan State. Again, they were number 9. They fall down one spot because everyone thinks that UCLA is God's gift to football. despite Michigan State hanging 56 on Wyoming at home.
Well, here's the thing. Let me go back to UCLA for just a second. If they don't have Brett Hundley and everybody had made such a big deal out of him last year, do you think they'd be getting all this attention this year?
No.
I don't either. I think it's all like they almost feel like compelled to rank them highly because of him.
Right, So UCLA didn't have some impressive victory, so they slotted him down a couple spots. They have one big win. It's like, oh, no, see, we were all right. They were just trying to work themselves out. Here you go. Back up into the top 10 with you.
We'll
like,
see.
Come on. I've always been of the impression that if you win by a decent margin like Notre Dame did, like Michigan State did, like Ole Miss did, even though it was kind of a sloppy game against Memphis, as Ole Miss, again, they were number 10. They're now back at 11. 24-3 win at home over Memphis. Kind of a testy game there in Ole Miss, but shouldn't have been. But do you think UCLA is better than Ole Miss or Michigan State or Notre Dame? I couldn't tell you, but I don't think so because all those teams still are undefeated. And well, Michigan State's 3-1, but Michigan State's one loss was on the road to a pretty damn good Oregon team, who was probably going to beat UCLA, and they were all won by decent margins. There was no reason for UCLA to jump all over these guys.
No, here's the thing. Okay, if all things being equal. You can't move them up just because, and that's basically what it looks like it happened here.
Yeah,
Michigan State got a huge win. Notre Dame got a big, blowout wins. And what all of a sudden makes UCLA that much better when all they did was just say a blowout win too? I guess you could make the argument that UCLA beat better teams or better team than Notre Dame.
Yeah,
Michigan State.
they beat a ranked team, but again, it was the backup quarterback and a bad defense, as everybody already knew. So I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to downplay my own team a little bit, and just to make sure UCLA doesn't do it. But I don't know.
I'm with you though. I look at it. I don't know if UCLA could beat Notre Dame or not, but I mean it's not clear cut, and that to me tells me that that's not enough to move them ahead of Notre Dame. all things being equal. But
well, it's not just even moving ahead of Notre Dame. They jumped three undefeated or two undefeated, one very good 3-1 Michigan State team. So I don't know. I don't think that was justified.
I don't either.
We'll move on. Last week, Georgia was number 12. They get a tight game against Tennessee. But Todd Gurley just running all over the place. Again, leading the Georgia Bulldogs to a 35-32 win. And despite the win, Georgia actually moved down a spot to number 13.
Well, you can thank UCLA for that, too. Here's a question with Gurley, okay? Is he a senior? Yeah. He's going to be eligible for the draft this year, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's been playing at Georgia for about 7 years now, it seems like. But, okay, he's a Heisman contender. He's a really great running back. But with the NFL being the way it is with running backs these days, do you think he goes in the first round?
He goes in the first round. He probably goes top five.
You think?
You got Mariota. You got Hundley.
Yeah.
Most likely. You're probably going to have Jameis Winston. I don't see why he would stay for another year.
Right. But that's my thing, though. I mean, with running, because the running back position has kind of been devalued over the past years in the NFL. I just don't know that.
Yeah.
I can see Gurley as like a way early second round pick, but I just don't know, especially after seeing what happened with Trent Richardson. I just don't know that anybody's going to waste a top five pick on a running back anymore.
Well,
that's not a knock on Gurley. I'm just saying that's just the way it is.
And this is something I wanted to bring. You mentioned Trent Richardson, because I don't want to put this on Gurley. I think Gurley is actually a pretty good talent. But you mentioned Richardson, and this was something that I kind of wanted to bring up at the Colts game, just because I was thinking about it, and there's a very obvious trend that I think I've noticed. As good as, you know, Alabama had the week off, so we don't get to talk about him, but T.J. Yeldon is the running back right now for the Crimson Tide, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a pretty darn good running back. Probably people are going to tout him up for the draft later. I wouldn't draft him, only because look at Nick Saban's Alabama running backs of late. Trent Richardson, Mark Ingram.
Yeah.
God, who else was it? There was somebody that I'm forgetting that they mentioned. But these guys.
Where did Eddie Lacy play?
That's right. That's the other guy. Eddie Lacy, Alabama. All three of those guys, they were very good in college. Extremely good in college, highly touted. I mean, Mark Ingram was a Heisman Trophy winner, for God's sakes.
Right.
And then they go to the NFL, and they're not that next-level running back talent.
Lacy has shown flashes of it.
Flashes.
But you see, the thing is, though, with Lacy, he's a bigger back. And just by size alone, I think he's going to have a little bit of success. But, you know, he was good last year, but this year he hasn't done jack in four games for the Packers.
Yeah.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think Gurley's probably better than those guys. But when you look at everything, the big picture, now granted, they don't have to pay the amount of money out for first-round picks they used to, but still, that's a lot of money in a first-round pick to invest in a running back when they're so kind of disposable and interchangeable these days. That's my thing. But I was just curious what you thought about that.
Also, I didn't even think about this for a second, but Georgia, remember how I said they won and they still moved down a spot?
Right.
Michigan or Mississippi State didn't play a game, and they jumped Georgia. So, yeah, you know, take that for what that's worth, I guess.
Well, I guess the good thing is that, the rankings, I don't know how much they're going to mean this year.
Like we said, after about five or six or maybe seven probably with Baylor, after seven, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
You got Florida State, Oregon, Alabama, Oklahoma, Auburn, Texas, Baylor.
Yeah.
Texas A&M, not Texas. But yeah, and then after that you get UCLA, Notre Dame, Michigan State, etc. I don't know. Then moving on, number 13, South Carolina. Just you never fail to disappoint me. Missouri with a late rally at South Carolina in Columbia, the Battle of the Columbias. Missouri comes out on top, 21-20. They're 4-1, and this was their first SEC game. South Carolina, this was their fourth SEC game. Missouri with their first SEC game. But they get the win, 21-20, on the road.
This is South Carolina.
Yeah, right. Can we be done with like thinking South Carolina is better than they are?
Well, that would require everybody else to be on board with that, because they get if you notice,
they're out of the rankings now.
Finally.
With the loss, they move from 13 to gone.
But they're just, I mean, they're kind of like, well, you know, they're the poor man's Clemson. Kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're just, they Clemson their way, I don't know, they're never as good as people think they are. Steve Spurrier, I'm sure he's a good coach and all that, but unless something changes, this team is not going to make that next step. They're never going to be a national championship contender because, first off, South Carolina and the SEC is never going to out-recruit Alabama or Auburn or
At best, they're a very good second tier.
Exactly, exactly.
Maybe occasionally, just because of the way the SEC East is set up, you know, and they're lucky right now that, you know, Florida is down,
right?
And Georgia's decent, but they're not as good as they could be because the SEC East is really just Florida, Georgia. Whereas in the West, you have LSU and Alabama. And now Texas A&M's up there, and Ole Miss is up there, and Mississippi State's playing well. So the West is definitely a grinder, and the SEC East is they're lucky that it's a down division right now, and all they really have to worry is trying to beat Georgia and Missouri. But they beat Georgia, and then they lose to Missouri, and now they're all in the same place as they were before. And it's not going to matter because whoever goes to the SEC title game is still going to lose to Alabama, LSU, Texas A&M, et cetera.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, maybe we should quit saying the SEC West is the best conference in football.
Yeah.
I don't think the entire SEC is, but the SEC West most definitely is.
No, definitely. So we'll move on in the rankings. Things start to get a little less interesting as we move down the rankings.
Right.
Now. Stanford on the road at Washington, they get a win, handing Washington its first loss with a 20-13 win.
That was Washington's first loss?
Yeah, they were 4.
I don't know why I was thinking they'd lost before that. Okay, well, good for them, the Huskies. I like them. I'd like to see them do well.
Yep. Then LSU, God, New Mexico State went to Death Valley and got a 63-7 parting gift.
And a big check.
And a very big check.
Right.
Wisconsin with a 27-10 win over South Florida. Nebraska with a 45-14 win over Illinois. Hey, your Buckeyes, they beat Cincinnati. They avoided your you know, scare. 50-28.
They're still not a good team. They're just and you know what? This is what kind of bugs me a little bit. I understand in the rankings that people get that Ohio State's not a good team and they're ranking them accordingly. But they're not doing that with everybody. And UCLA being the perfect example of that. I don't think that UCLA is as good as they've made them out to be, but they're still getting ranked highly.
Do you think that Ohio State's properly ranked at, I guess they're at 20 now?
I think that's fair. I'm looking behind them. No, they wouldn't beat Oklahoma State. East Carolina would give them a game, but I think the Buckeyes would win just because they're just deeper, more talent. Missouri, there's no way the Buckeyes beat Missouri. There's just no way.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess 20's fair, but, you know, if you're going to do that with the Buckeyes, do it with everybody is all I'm saying. I mean, come on. Wisconsin, yeah, okay. We got 2 3-1 teams here, okay? Wisconsin barely gets by South Florida. I'm sorry. It's just not fair. But I'm not going to go down that road because then I'll just sound like a bitter homer, and I don't want to do that.
And you had Kansas State with a 58-28 win over UTEP. So that
– no, really? Yeah, a lot of teams just piling up with the big matchups there, huh?
Yeah, you know, but like we said, this was a very lackluster week. Next week is much better. But before we move on to looking ahead at a very juicy schedule next week, let's stay in the Big Ten and let's talk about the Michigan Wolverines.
Yeah.
What in the world is happening there? I mean, they lose at home 30-14 to Minnesota in a bad game. But beyond that, their quarterback that they had there at the end of the game, what was his name?
I don't know. He's the backup quarterback.
Shane Morris.
Okay.
He was already playing with a limp at the time, and then he gets a shot directly to the head. You know, the guy lowered his helmet, hit him right with the crown, right in the jaw, and he's trying to walk back to the sidelines, and he can't even stand up all the way there.
Right.
He's clearly out of it. So he goes to the sideline and gets looked at for a play or whatever, and then goes right back into the game. And, you know, and he just looks awful. The ESPN announcers are calling out Michigan for it.
Didn't they say it was appalling, I think was the word they used?
Right. And so, I mean, things aren't looking good for Brady Hoke as it was before. Now you have this happen. And he uses the defense after the game that he doesn't make decisions on who plays and who doesn't play.
The hell he doesn't?
When asked if Morris, who took a nasty illegal shot to the head, had been re-examined for a concussion, he replied, "I assume so."
God.
So,
well, and this is the thing too. I heard this on the radio today that the Michigan coaching staff was claiming that no one saw the hit.
Right.
How is that even possible?
How did you not see it?
How
is somebody not looking at your quarterback?
Well, here's the thing too. Okay, if they didn't, if none of them saw the hit, that explains why they're 4-9 in their last 13 games. Because if they're not even watching the field, then he's going to get fired. I don't know. I mean, will this be what does it? I'm sure it'll play a part in it. It's just, it depends.
Well, there was apparently it's not just him, because the athletic director kind of backed him up and said it was a failure of the system or whatever. And I guess on campus tonight, they were having in the little free speech area, they were having a rally among current students and alumni calling for the resignation of the athletic director, not just Brady Hoke, but the athletic director. So the constituents of Michigan are upset, and you know, this on the field, Michigan's 2-3. This is the first time in school history that they have had three losses before October.
Wow!
In Michigan football history, and that's is long.
Yeah, that goes back to like the 1850s or something.
They have never had three losses before October.
Well, my understanding is that athletic director is kind of a showboat type, and then you've got Brady Hoke, and they probably, you know, this is kind of like a Raider situation. You kind of have to clean house from the top down, and I think that's what's going to have to happen there.
And I know I've heard this talk kind of bandied about, especially by Ohio State alumni. I mean, you guys hate Michigan. Michigan's your rival.
Right.
But you still want to see Michigan at least be competitive, right?
Absolutely. It's, you know what, it's no fun beating them when they're like this. It's just, it takes it, I mean, what, so what, it's like, it's going out, it's like going out and beating I don't know, you know, a MAC team or something. I mean, what's the fun in that? it really is, because you know, a Michigan win is fun when it means something, and Ohio State more than likely is going to beat their brains out again this year. And it's just no fun anymore. I'd like to see the Wolverines be competitive again, because that makes the rivalry. It's not a rivalry right now. It's a homecoming game for Ohio State. Is what it's turned into. So yeah, I want them to be competitive, and it's just more fun that way. And right now, it's just not a lot of fun. And I think it's better for college football if Michigan is good instead of where they're at now.
Yep. No, it's a bad situation right now, and Brady Hoke's time is clearly up in Ann Arbor. Maybe it's well, here's the thing, and somebody else said this today, and it just nauseated me, that it's not the Michigan way, quote unquote, to fire a coach before the season's over. Do you think that they at least keep Brady Hoke to the end of the season, or do you think they'll, with all this kind of hoopla going around now, that they'll get rid of him before that?
I mean, if that kid, the backup quarterback, they let him play after a play that he should have just been taken off the field and probably gone to the hospital, or at least to the locker room to be checked out. That might be a big enough problem that they might actually fire him now. But no, their Michigan way is what's getting them into trouble these days. They're trying to stick to a system that worked way back in the old days. It just doesn't hold up under in today's college football. So, yeah. You know, it doesn't work that way anymore. I mean, you know, that it's just silly. I understand that. I appreciate it. I respect what they're trying to do. They want to keep it in the family and all that. They want to do the Michigan way. You know, it's like the Cardinal way or the Patriot way or whatever, but it's just outdated. And if you keep Hoke, it's just going to get worse, because then everybody's going to be on you questioning it the rest of the way. And especially if this kid turns out to be really badly hurt or whatever, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. You got to cut him loose, I think.
Yeah. I think they have to, but it's the Michigan way, Greg. And yeah, you can't disobey the Michigan way.
Sure you can. Is Jim Harbaugh the next coach there, you think?
I mean, it's the name being thrown out there, but a lot of people are trying to say that he wouldn't do it. I don't know why. I would think that's a Jim Harbaugh-type job. And the other thing with Jim Harbaugh, he almost seems like in the way that Nick Saban, when he came to the NFL and then left – Jim Harbaugh seems like he's a guy that prefers to have total control over things.
Exactly.
And while, yeah, Nick Saban was a very good coach, and if he had stayed in the NFL, I'm sure he probably would have succeeded with the Dolphins. But he didn't have say over everything.
Nope.
Whereas at Alabama or, you know, LSU or wherever else, he had and has complete control over everything that happens, over personnel, over practice, over marketing, over game day, over everything. And I think that's something that would, you know, have some sort of attraction for Jim Harbaugh to go to Michigan, especially because he'd be walking back like a returning hero.
Oh, my God, yes. You know? That's who they've wanted all along.
Right. But the thing is, too, I don't know how much there is for him to work with right now.
Not much. Michigan.
He would have to go through at least maybe two kind of rough seasons before things started to turn back around in Michigan, though, I'd have to think.
Well, you know, another thing I've noticed about Harbaugh, and I thought about this today, it was they had a guy in from the Detroit Free Press on the Dan Patrick Show, and he said that a lot of the big-name coaches don't want to coach at Michigan while the athletic director is in charge there.
Yeah.
But then I started thinking about Harbaugh and the 49ers, and see if you agree with this. When he took over that team, they were a young team. Because everybody's like, Mike Singletary's got all this young talent, they should be better than they are, and they weren't. Harbaugh comes in with a young team with his coaching style, very intense and all that, and it worked for a while. But now I think that you've got guys that are in the league 4, 5, 6 years, whatever, and it's kind of worn thin with them. I think that Harbaugh, right, with his style, would be better suited for college football, where you're going to have the turnover where his act isn't going to get tired as quickly.
And, right, and that's probably the same thing with Nick Saban, too.
Yeah.
Is you can mold a 18, 19, 20-year-old
right
to doing what you want him to do. Not so much a 28, 29, 32, 34,
right,
7-year, 10-year NFL veteran.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, when Harbaugh took over for the 49ers, Frank Gore was still young. Patrick Willis was still a young player. Michael Crabtree had just come into the league. These guys were young guys. They were still used to the college way. But just out of just sheer growing up, all of a sudden the stuff that seemed cool when you were 18 seems ridiculous when you're 26. And
yeah.
I just think that if Harbaugh wants to have a lasting impression as a coach, I think he's done well in the NFL. Usually college coaches don't do this well. But at the end of the day, he's probably better suited to be a college coach. I really believe that.
Yep. I agree. But let's look ahead to next week. And despite the lackluster week, whoa, man, here we go. You want to rev up college football? Let's rev up college football. Thursday, you got two 4-0 teams. Arizona goes up to Oregon. Arizona's unranked. Oregon's number two, but it is going to be a shootout. Friday, you have Utah State and BYU. Always a
That'll be wild because Utah State can score points. BYU is really good. That's going to be an interesting one.
Alabama, number three, going to Ole Miss on the road. That'll be a tight contest there. That was going to be a top 10 matchup until UCLA
screwed everything up.
Yeah, but whatever. Oklahoma, number four, goes on the road to number 25, TCU. Number 15, LSU, goes on the road to number five, Auburn.
Ooh.
Number six, Texas A&M, goes on the road to number 12, Mississippi State. Utah, who's actually been pretty decent, they go to the Rose Bowl to take on number eight, UCLA.
I tell you, now, if I would say that of the upset potential games, I like Utah to have a decent shot at knocking off UCLA.
Number 14, Stanford, goes to South Bend to take on number nine, Notre Dame. Number 19, Nebraska, goes to number 10, Michigan State. How about this? Number 20, Ohio State, on the road at Maryland for the first time.
That won't be a problem for the Buckeyes. And if it is...
You don't think so? No, Maryland's been decent.
Nah, it won't be a problem. You can't lose to Maryland. You just can't.
And Arizona State goes to USC. Big, look for a bounce back there from the Sun Devils. But look at that. I mean, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ranked matchups.
I tell you, that LSU, Auburn, that's going to be something.
LSU, Auburn, Alabama, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Mississippi State. All three of those SEC games are going to be just choice games. And luckily, they're all on at different times.
Love them, hate them, whatever. I'm sorry, but it just doesn't get any better in college football than watching the good SEC teams go at it. It just doesn't.
Finally, a solid, just a really meaty Saturday in college football.
And again, like last week, you left out the biggest game of the week, which would be Toledo at Western Michigan.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Toledo Rockets, they go to Western Michigan to take on the Mustangs?
Broncos.
Broncos?
That's the same thing we did last time. Yeah, they're the Broncos.
Take on the Horses. Why can't there just be a team called the Horses? Why do we have to be the Colts, Broncos, Mustangs?
I don't know. You gave me an idea for my next fantasy football team.
The Horses.
The Horses.
Does it have a combination of every horse logo you've ever seen?
But yeah, it's going to be a good weekend, and we'll finally have some good stuff to talk about, I think, next week. So that'll be good.
Yeah, it'll be a really solid solid college Saturday. Hopefully some upsets. You know, I mean, all these ranked teams, if Alabama loses to Ole Miss,
ooh,
if Auburn loses to LSU,
I see both of those, I think, are very distinct possibilities.
If Stanford beats Notre Dame, it doesn't really do a whole lot. Maybe move Stanford up. But if Notre Dame beats Stanford?
Yeah, they're going to jump if they do that.
Maybe they'll jump UCLA. even if UCLA wins.
Oh, believe me. I mean, as much as the media loves UCLA this year.
A good Notre Dame team.
They're just waiting for an excuse to put Notre Dame into that top five somewhere, believe me. Mm-hmm. Just waiting for an excuse.
Oh, yeah. And God knows that if Notre Dame made the football playoff in the first year of the playoff.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, though. If they can go undefeated, they'll have earned it. They should absolutely be there.
They've got Stanford this week, then they host North Carolina, and then in 2 weeks they go to Tallahassee to take on Florida State.
That's gonna be a tall order to fill for the Fighting Irish.
They can score the points like they have in these last few games.
Oh yeah, I mean that's what I mean. If they get past Stanford and they go and beat Florida State, if they're undefeated at that point, I don't know how you don't rank them number one. Really.
Oh yeah, yeah, really. But yeah, I guess that's gonna do it. For the college and NFL portions of our program. Any final words before we head out into the sunset?
Go Rockets, go Buckeyes, go Browns, go Packers.
Go Colts, yeah, Colts. Go Colts, beat the Ravens. Go Devils, go beat USC. Go do something for yourselves. And I've got Bell Gardens going to El Toro High School this weekend.
I have Brecksville Broadview Heights coming to Amherst to take on the Comets, who have not won a game since the first game of the season that I called this year.
Oh.
So I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, and go Royals, finish off this game.
Absolutely.
Go Royals today. Don't go Royals come Thursday when you come to Anaheim. And I'll be there for that one. So
excellent. Well, the Royals are up 3-2 now in the top of the fifth.
Yep, and they're holding on.
But, go Pirates tomorrow night. How can I forget
that? Go Pirates.
Yeah, absolutely.
Knock the Bay Area out in two full days. That'd be fine.
There you go.
You can follow us on all of our platforms: Twitter, iTunes, YouTube. You can find us.
You'll find us. We're there.
Listen to Basically a Sports Show. Listen to Basically a Geek Show. Might get some love occasionally. For Greg, I'm Zach. This has been Basically a Football Show. We will catch you next time.